So these are the five knowledges, or the five wisdoms, which exhibit, on the same level as it were, different aspects of prajna, different aspects of wisdom. Now, we've dealt now with jhana and with prajna, with meditation and with wisdom, separately, as distinct paramitas. But it's time now to consider them together. Together. And this we shall do with the help of Huining, or Huailang, the sixth patriarch of the Dhyana school in China. The Dhyana school is the Chan, or the Zen school, of course. Huining, the sixth patriarch, in the course of his platform scripture, a series of addresses to a body of people whom he very politely addresses as learned audience, has this to say on the subject of samadhi and prajna. He says, "Learned audience, in my system, samadhi, which of course is the highest form of dhyana, samadhi and prajna are fundamental. But do not be under the wrong impression that these two are independent of each other, for they are inseparably united and are not two entities. Samadhi is the quintessence of prajna, while prajna is the activity of samadhi. At the very moment that we attain prajna, samadhi is therewith, and vice versa. If you understand this principle, you understand the equilibrium of samadhi and prajna. A disciple should not think that there is a distinction between samadhi begets prajna and prajna begets samadhi. To hold such an opinion would imply that there are two characteristics in the Dharma. Learned audience, to what are samadhi and prajna analogous? They are analogous to a lamp and its light. With the lamp, there is light. Without it, it would be dark. The lamp is the quintessence of the light, and the light is the expression of the lamp. In name, they are two things, but in substance, they are one and the same. It is the same case with samadhi and prajna." In other words, commenting upon this, we may say that samadhi, which represents the highest form of jhana, is the enlightened mind as it is in itself. Whereas prajna is its, what we may describe as, objective functioning. The enlightened mind at work in the world, as it were. We could even say that dhyana represents the subjective and prajna the objective aspect of enlightenment. We could say that, except that in enlightenment there's no subject and no object. Well, we've now completed our journey. Perhaps we are not just standing on the threshold of enlightenment, perhaps in imagination, in hopeful anticipation at least, we are now knocking on the gate. Perhaps the Buddha's listening. Perhaps he's ready to open the gate a little. Perhaps he's ready, one day, to let us in. We've seen how the Bodhisattva unites various pairs of opposites, the altruistic and the individualistic aspects of the spiritual life, the masculine and the feminine approaches. And we've seen today how the Bodhisattva unites the subjective and the objective poles, as it were, of spiritual experience at their very highest level. In other words, we've seen during the last 3 weeks, including today, how the Bodhisattva practices giving and uprightness, patience and vigor, meditation and wisdom. And these are, of course, the six paramitas, or perfections, or transcendental virtues, which constitute the establishment aspect of the bodhicitta. And it is, of course, upon the arising of the bodhicitta that one becomes, one is born as, a bodhisattva. So we've covered a very great deal of ground, but there's still quite a bit of ground left to cover. And next week we shall be turning from the comparatively general, the comparatively abstract, to the more particular, the more individual, the more concrete. And we shall be considering the stages of the bodhisattva path in terms of the actual persons who realize those stages. In other words, we shall be considering them in terms of the bodhisattva hierarchy. And until then, we remain standing, or kneeling perhaps, or perhaps even sitting in meditation on the threshold of enlightenment.